Curlew in Autumn, a thriller serial for radio in 6 episodes by Edward Boyd, with David Ashton as Peter Kalman. Episode 3. Peter Kalman, failed small-town lawyer, has lost his girlfriend Jenny, but has gained a mysterious new client called Magda von Schellenberg, who has given him £1 million, with instructions to set up a temple of peace at a place called Noctua Cottage. Meanwhile, no one knows why Nurse Nicholson has been killed, or why the staff at a local private hospital are lying about a patient called Tim Layton. Nor does Kalman know why his office has been completely wrecked, or why his rival Hansford has offered him a partnership. So, labeled by some a millionaire and by others a murderer, Kalman has decided to take a look at Noctua Cottage.
They say that dogs grow to look like their owners, so why should not houses take on the characteristics of those who once inhabited them? Noctua Cottage had once long ago been a primary school, and a certain innocence seemed to have shaped it. In the chill evening autumnal light, it had the quality of a child's drawing, a white rectangle with windows. And yet, there was an air of peace about the place, a kind of gentleness. The old Bourbon roses that clung to the wall had a fresh, clean perfume, and no thorns. At the side of the cottage, a rowan tree grew, its red berries a warning to witches. Inside, the cottage was spotless, almost pathologically clean and tidy. Its neatness betrayed more than a housewifely pride which allows the occasional imperfection. No spider had been allowed to lurk in even the highest corner. There was none of that dank chill that seems to take over unoccupied cottages almost as a right. This place had been fired regularly, and recently. It evoked a kind of stand-by-your-beds discipline which made the little model aircraft on the mantelpiece seem not incongruous. It was a model of a Junkers 88, and it seemed more appropriate in the room than the garish red telephone on the windowsill. I picked up the receiver and was surprised by the dialing tone, and that made me dial a number.
Simon Hansford speaking.
I thought I might catch you before you left the office.
Well, you're lucky, whoever you are.
It's Peter Kalman.
Why? What's in your mind, Peter?
I'm sorry I upset you.
And I'm sorry I was a bit short with you.
I forgot you'd no sense of humour.
Well, just bear that in mind for do on, and you and me will get on just fine.
I'm calling from Noctua, Mr. Hansford.
Is this another of your jokes, Peter?
Oh, no joke, I assure you.
Peter, there shouldn't be a phone there.
Well, I promise you there is. Mr. Hansford, when was Noctua last occupied?
Let me see now. About 15 years back.
Is there something odd about the place?
It would appear that there might be.
I mean things that you would know about.
There might be things I ken about that I'm no prepared to talk about.
Not even to your new partner?
Oh, of course, if you decided to throw in with me.
I have.
You made a wise move.
Now, about Noctua,
Mr. Come and see me in the morning and we'll draw up some sort of agreement. Then maybe I'll tell you the sad history of Noctua.
I hung up the phone that wasn't supposed to be there, and it was then I became aware of the man who had been standing there watching me. He had arrived with the dusk and seemed to be a part of it. I could make out that he was tall, but nothing much more.
What are you doing here?
First things first. Who are you?
I look after this place.
Oh. Does anyone else know that?
Bitter?
Who pays you?
There is no question of payment.
You do it for love, no doubt.
You find that reprehensible?
No, no, merely incredible.
May I ask you once more what you are doing here?
I am here on behalf of a client who is interested in this cottage.
Interested in what way?
Interested in buying it.
You have been here before?
Never.
And it was not you who...
You are saying?
Nothing.
If you don't mind, I'll have a look at the rest of the house.
Please do.
He watched as I moved into the other room. There was about him something patriarchal. He was in his mid-60s, bearded, straight as a spear. He had the kind of profile you see on ancient coins, but the main impression you were left with was of that immense dignity. The room I went into had originally been two small rooms, and now it was one largish and very feminine bedroom. Your first thought was that the inspiration behind it was an old 40s movie, and then you realized with a shock that the room was the genuine article, and that the whole house was a kind of museum, and that the patriarch in the next room was a kind of self-appointed curator.
Have you seen enough?
Strange place, isn't it?
In what way?
It's trapped.
I do not understand.
It's as though one day in the 1940s time suddenly gave a lurch and bypassed this house and everything in it.
Then you will not be recommending it to your client.
My client has already decided, sight unseen.
That is very foolish.
What right have you to say that my
client... There are more rights than those written down in law books.
A very dangerous doctrine.
All doctrines are dangerous.
Look, are you trying to tell me who should or should not be allowed to buy this cottage?
I am saying something quite different. I am saying that rather than see this cottage sold to the wrong kind of person...
Yes?
I would be prepared to burn it to the ground.
He left as quickly and quietly as he had arrived. Nor did I stay much longer, only pausing as I locked up to wonder why the little model aircraft, the Junkers 88 that had been in the mantelpiece, was no longer there. Outside, a full, fat moon dappled the silver landscape with hard-edged shadows. The moonlight made the fields seem under snow, transformed the roads into ribbons of white sand. I had a wild vision of a patriarch in long robes and sandals striding along and holding aloft in front of him a tiny model of a Junkers 88. But no patriarch appeared to disturb that moonlit journey home. Only two people, the same number of miles from town, a man and a woman jogging.
Is that you, Carmen?
Yes, who's your running mate?
She says her name's Jenny.
Hello, Peter.
You wouldn't have looked for me by any chance.
As soon as I heard the news flash, I thought, better find Sergeant Dunsmore.
What news flash?
Starting midnight tonight, jogging's been banned.
Why? Where do you get your advance information from?
Oh, he's got a girlfriend who works for Breakfast TV. She makes the tea and reads the tea leaves.
And how long is this ban liable to last?
Only till the government dreams up a way of taxing it.
I shall start a protest movement. I'll bring every jogger in the country out onto the streets.
Oh, they're already.
Oh, now that I've broken the news, do you want to make the most of the time remaining, or do you want a lift?
We want a lift.
You know any patriarchs, Isaiah?
Why do people keep asking me that?
Maybe because your first name's Isaiah.
Do people ask you, Peter, if you know any disciples?
As many as ask Jenny if she knows any wrens.
Stick to patriarchs.
I went up to Nocturne tonight.
What for?
I was acting on behalf of a client.
Oh, I didn't think rich people had to do things like that.
I'm newly rich, haven't learned the rules yet.
I suggest that the last two remarks be deleted from the minutes. Agreed?
Remarks quite uncalled for.
That could be argued.
Only on the grounds of sheer bitchiness.
Stop the car.
Well, what will you do if I don't call a policeman?
Do as she says, Peter.
Willingly. Sorry about that.
Oh, say no more.
I hate rowing in public.
You get used to it.
I don't think so.
Oh, take my word for it. My father and mother used to have real fights. People used to queue up, buy tickets for those battles. How well would you say you knew Jenny?
Until recently, I would have said I knew her as well as any man can know any woman.
You never found her devious?
Quite the reverse. An odd question, if I may say so, Isaiah.
Story of my life.
Now who's being devious?
No, not devious. Evasive.
And what are you evading?
Disloyal thought. I was wondering if Jenny deliberately provoked that row to stop us discussing that patriarch of yours.
Do you know anything to his detriment, as they say?
No, no thing. German. He's got a small holding about half a mile from Nocturne, lives alone, bothers nobody. Seems to need nobody. A loner.
Pays his taxes, keeps his nose clean.
Yeah, that's the sort of thing.
Well, what would Jenny's connection be with him, I wonder?
Another lame duck to add to your aviary, maybe?
Could be as easy as that. Does it matter?
In a way.
What makes it important?
Well, I've asked Jenny to marry me.
Many long years ago, I saw in a little flea-pit cinema a film called Pinocchio. There was a moment in it when a plump, kindly benevolent coachman suddenly turns into a threatening, sinister monster. I sat there, unable temporarily to breathe, betrayed, my innocence fractured, never to be repaired. Now I seem to relive that dire experience. The sudden chill, the caught breath, the sheer incredulity. I drove the rest of the way in a silence that was far from companionable. It was still early when I dropped Isaiah at his digs, but too late for the light still shining from my office window and suggesting uninvited company.
Oh, it's only me, Mr. Carman.
Oh, what brings you here, Mary? I thought you weren't going to work for me anymore.
Oh, I can't keep away from the old place.
Oh, you've been away for 24 hours, not 24 years.
Ah, well, when I heard what had happened, I thought I'd tag a tanroon and see if I could help you clear it up.
Well, you've done wonders, Mary. It's enough to encourage the vandals to come back.
Oh, heaven forbid. I see you've got a new electric kettle.
Ah, it's just the same old kettle repaired.
So it is.
You'll have heard of my windfall.
It's the talk of the town.
If you care to change your mind about coming back.
And I didn't tempt you, Mr. Carman.
Be more money.
My mind's made up.
Well, here's something nobody else knows. I am going into partnership with old Hansford.
You've no have heard the news, then?
What news?
Old Hansford's had a massive heart attack just after he got home the night. Old Hansford's dead.
It was all happening too fast. Too many things were clamouring for attention, shading off into one another, throwing false shadows. So I ended up thinking of old dead Hansford and his Scottish canniness, and his sly lechery and his practical common sense, which was really disguised timidity. I tried to imagine him young, but failed. He'd not been born at all, but dropped fully-fledged from a novel by John Galt. I went home and slept as soundly, if not as permanently, as old Hansford, and woke to the kind of morning that gives autumn a good name. Two coffees and three cigarettes later, the telephone rang.
This is Jenny. Peter?
Yes?
Have you heard the news?
Television, radio, newspaper, or grapevine?
About old man Hansford.
I heard about it last night.
I was meant to have an appointment with him this morning.
Oh, you'll have to find another lawyer then.
Are you volunteering?
No.
You're the only lawyer in town now.
I know, it's made me drunk with power.
You haven't asked what the appointment was about.
It doesn't concern me.
That's rather become your slogan, hasn't it?
I don't think so.
If you really mean that, you have an appointment at 11 a.m.
With you?
With Isaiah Dunsmore.
Prompt to the second, he appeared in my office, not looking at all like the first of the major Hebrew prophets. He was in uniform, as though he needed more authority than was vested in his biblical name.
I'm not so sure this is a good idea.
All I know is that I'm required to deputise for the late lamented Hansford.
Does that bother you?
Well, why should it, if she wants to rub it in that I'm second
best? You're being hypersensitive.
Well, maybe that's better than having no sensitivity at
all. Just let's stick to the matter in hand.
Gladly. Will someone please give me an inkling of what it is?
We're going to descend on the Spencer Whatsett Hospital.
I've already been there.
Aye, I heard about that. This time it's going to be different.
Bonnie Galloway, the song says, and that morning the adjective was an understatement. The sky was an unequivocal blue, and the purple heather glowed with its special autumnal fire. The trees were a carnival of reds, orange, brown and yellow. In autumn, every tree is a Sir Philip Sidney that has learned to greet death with style. Dunsmore had hardly spoken since he got into the car. He seemed deep in thought, and when I spoke to him, he seemed to have to drag himself out of some private, protected world.
Sorry, what did you say I was miles away?
I was wondering why Jenny went to old Hansford.
I think she felt he carried more clout than you do.
In other words, I'm a lousy lawyer.
Her words exactly.
Is that your opinion too?
Yes.
Well, now we know. The last time I came here, Jenny and I didn't exactly cover ourselves in glory.
Jenny lost her cool, I gather.
Yes. I should have been able to control her.
Famous last words. The real trouble was you didn't have enough ammunition.
That's just as well. Jenny might have shot the receptionist. What secret weapon do we have this time?
A car with a damaged headlight.
You think it might be the car that killed Morag Nicholson?
No harm in asking, obviously.
It belonged to anyone we know.
It belongs to the motor pool at the hospital.
Well, at least that lets me out.
You were never really in, Peter.
Hmm?
First thing I did was to check your car.
You'll go a long way, my friend.
No, as a policeman, I hope.
You have your sights on higher things.
University?
Then what?
I think this town could do with a good radical lawyer.
Jenny was waiting at the gates of the hospital. She got into the car and we moved up the long avenue. And I was suddenly assailed by a sense of unreality. It was as though I had been looking at a painting, a landscape of an earlier and more spacious age, and had somehow found myself on the wrong side of the frame. The same receptionist gave us the same superior look from behind the same desk.
I'm a police officer.
I can see that.
Oh, she's got 20/20 vision.
I'd have guessed contact lenses.
Well, you'd have guessed wrong.
Ah, the story of your
Miss
life.
Miss Oliver.
Oh, you astonish me.
I think the lady can do without all this unnecessary needling.
The lady couldn't agree more.
I only wanted to ask...
Oh, the world is filled with people who will not take no for an answer.
How would you know? You've never said no in your life.
Miss Oliver, I must insist that you keep quiet or else wait outside. Now, if you don't mind answering a few questions...
I've already told this young lady that the man she's looking for is not and never has been here.
Who said anything about a man?
She's got some bee in her bonnet about it. A man called Tim Layton.
Well, it's an interest the police don't share.
Oh, sorry.
I would like to talk to someone about Morag Nicholson.
What about her?
We think we may have found the car that killed her.
Oh, God, no!
The transition from poise to panic, from sophisticated lady to scared woman, was almost ludicrous, except that something hung in the air that said this was no laughing matter. We stood beside the abandoned desk, but the receptionist failed to reappear. Instead, we were confronted by a smooth young man with an air of phony benevolence and a South of France tan. That probably came from a sun lamp.
I'm Dr. Webber. I believe you have a problem.
There does seem to be a problem, but whose problem it is exactly is something we might profitably discuss.
Now, the waiting room is less public.
Can we go into the one with the David Hockney prints?
Yes. Are you an admirer of David Hockney?
I can take him or leave him.
Incidentally, these are not prints. They are all originals.
I should have known.
Can I interest anyone in coffee?
No.
No, thank you.
No, thanks.
Right. Shall we get down to cases?
Which case would you like first?
Oh, dear me. Is there more than one?
There's two, actually. But they might well be connected.
I see. Do I know you from somewhere, young lady?
I'm Jenny Oliver.
Ah, yes.
May I ask how you happen to know Miss Oliver?
Know of her, sir. By the way, I didn't catch your name.
Kalman, Peter Kalman. I'm a lawyer.
A lawyer and a policeman. You come quite formidably buttressed by the law, Miss Oliver.
You still haven't answered the question.
The answer is quite simple, Sergeant. This hospital is not an ivory tower. We subscribe to the local newspapers. Indeed, we consider it of the utmost importance to keep in touch with local opinion.
Really?
Really. At one time, you seemed to be writing in the Gazette every week.
Yes, that was our campaign against the dumping of nuclear waste.
May I congratulate you on its successful outcome.
I feel sick.
Well, you're in the right place for it.
Sick, sick, sick!
Is there anything wrong?
Yes, you are! Standing there with your out-of-season tan and your 300-guinea suit and talking all that patronising rubbish. What kind of an idiot do you think I am?
And would you accept a snap diagnosis?
Oh, come off it. What have you done with him?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
She's talking about a man called Tim Layton, who we think is being held here against his will.
Suppose, for the sake of argument, he was here.
He is here.
And what responsibility do you have towards this man?
Oh, he's a friend.
And if I told you he was dangerously ill?
I wouldn't believe you.
Unfortunately, I can't prove
it. Oh, come on, you'll have to do better than that.
I'm open to constructive suggestions.
You could let us see him.
I can't do that.
Why not?
He isn't here anymore.
Where is he, then?
I haven't the faintest idea. You see, he absconded from the hospital the night Nurse Nicholson died.
In episode 3 of Curlew in Autumn by Edward Boyd, Peter Kalman was played by David Ashton. Isaiah Dunsmore was played by Gregor Fisher, Jenny by Stella Forge, Old Hansford by Ian Stewart, Shawl by Brown Darby, Dr. Weber by Sandy Nielsen, Mary Matheson by Doreen Cameron, and The Hospital Receptionist by Tamara Kennedy. Curlew in Autumn was directed in our Edinburgh studios by Patrick Rayner.